Welcome. I'm Carol Sanford. I am the host of the Regenerative Business Podcast. We share stories from the business world of companies that are in pursuit of what we call the first principles of life. That means that they're principles that help us understand how living systems work. There are seven of them. I'd like to give you just a quick overview of those so as you listen to this interview that's coming up, you would quickly be able to grasp which thing they're speaking about, even though we may not ask them directly. The first of the principles is working from the perspective of understanding a whole rather than parts. So, for example, someone working regeneratively is working with a whole child, a whole family, a whole community, or a whole ecosystem, rather than segmenting it into parts and pieces. The second principle is that you're working from the development of potential of a specific real individual or system, rather than working from ideals and problems. Well, what ideals means is that you have a template and you layer it on top of everything. It tends to objectify it and say, you ought to be like this, rather than looking at potential, which is where something really comes to life. One of the ways you'll know is if you're working with the template of ideals is you probably have to certify something or be certified, or you have standards you have to meet in order to be a member. So what you want to be doing is working from potential, which is really working from principles as we are here, or aims. The third principle is you're considering systems reciprocity rather than transactional exchange. In order for something to be vital, viable, and evolving and have the capacity to do that, it needs to be seen as a part of something that the whole is moving at the same time. We tend to fall into our world thinking about the exchanges we make, and we become extractive because we're looking for a quid pro quo. The fourth principle is working from the essence, the singularity, you might even call it the individuatedness of a living entity. What you see there is something that is never seen anywhere else. Doing the opposite means that we categorize it into one of four types, or one of seven types, or one of nine types. The minute we do that, we no longer are connected with the essence and the individuation of a living entity, and we've made it into a commodity, which can be found among a large number of similar things. The fifth principle is working and understanding living systems as nested inside one another. That's whether you're talking about a living system being a place or a person or some other dimension. Humans, for example, are nested inside of families and inside of communities and then inside of an ecosystem. In order to understand that, it helps us get over our flatland view of where everything is separate, and we have to bring ourselves back to that we all exist in something that permaculture might call a guild. The sixth principle is we all intervene and we all have roles to play. But the important thing we do is we learn to intervene nodally. Nodally is contrasted to a shotgun effect, which many sustainability programs have, or many other programs which are not even about doing good, where you get long lists and you work on trying to make sure you cover all the bases. Nodally, on the other hand, looks at where the high potential intersections run together. It's an acupuncture idea. If you want to understand this, you think of a child, either yourself as a child or your own children, and you'd say the most nodal place to be intervening with a child is where they have enthusiasm, passion, it intersects with their interest, and it's something they seem to be drawn to. If you wanted to teach them something, starting there might be an example of a node. The seventh principle is more related to people, although it does fan out to all living systems. And it means we work on development of human beings rather than manipulation, or of animals, or of other systems. Now, what that means is we're actually working on building capacity of human beings rather than trying to maneuver them into how we want them to behave from the outside based on incentives, rewards, recognition, or just anything that would seem sometimes to force them into the path that we want to go. Developmental way of working helps people become self-directed, self-determining, and even greater tomorrow than they are today. You're going to hear each of the stories which come out of the interview as representing a pursuit of one of these, and most of the time, more than one. They are not the same thing as pursuing sustainability, doing good, fair trade, or other examples of what mostly are ideals that are drawn. Not that those are bad things. They have their utility, but they don't fit the regenerative paradigm. So listen. Listen for how the particular business that's being interviewed and the story they're telling is moving in pursuit of the principles. You'll hear them either having intention toward them, endeavors where they've put some things in place, results from the new way of working that is creating something greater, and effects where it's beginning to ripple out in time. So today, as you listen to the interview that we have of a small business, do your own assessment. Which of these are they pursuing? Have they done it all the way to the level of producing significant effects? And in some places, have they only expressed their intention? We think everything counts.
So welcome, Simon. I would love for you to introduce briefly your company, a wonderful company, and yourself and your role in it so that people know who they're listening to.
Hi, well, I'm Simon Constantine from Lush Cosmetics, a fresh handmade cosmetics company that sells internationally. And I have several kind of different roles. I'm a perfumer. I make all the fragrances for Lush. I'm also, I work with the Debine team on kind of fair trade and beyond projects. And I also, I work with the board. So I also chair our board meetings. So I have several different roles here.
You certainly do. Lush is, I think, known to many who are in North America because we do find it here. You are based, of course, in the UK. That's your home. But you have been honored by our illustrious panel of judges as wow, to the highest degree of those who submitted, at least, and that we know of at the moment, achieving the 7 first principles of regeneration. So I would like to have some of the stories that you have. Mostly we'll do this through stories, things you know that you have done over the years of the existence of the company. And the first one that I'd like to start with is our first principle called working with wholes. Now, what we mean by that is we believe nothing can be regenerated except the whole. You can't regenerate the arm of a child. It's the whole child. You regenerate their spirit, etc. You can't do the same thing with a watershed. You can't just take water and regenerate it because it's in the context of soil and forest and life. You can't regenerate just one part of a city. You have to regenerate the whole because it's the whole that gets brought back to life. One of the ways we find it's easy for people to tell their stories is to think about what they're doing upstream and downstream with wholes. So particularly, I'd love to hear stories you have about your customers, and the effect that you know it's having on their lives. What you've done to track people who use your products, how that affects their lives, and just anything that you could give us that helps us understand how well you connected are to the people who love your products and how it affects their lives. Can you share anything in that way? And then we'll go back upstream to suppliers. But let's go downstream first.
Yeah, certainly. I think Lush has always had a very loyal customer following right from the inception, actually. It's something that I think other companies are quite envious of, and something that it's almost like we didn't really, I would say not do it on purpose. We have, obviously, we value customer service a lot. And we're in a very unique position that the founders of the company, the shareholders of the company, are also the creators of the products of the company. And so the formulators, we don't have a separate team that create products, creams, bath bombs, shower gels, shampoos, that their expertise is kind of embedded within the structure of the business. And to that end, everybody who's creating those products has a customer in mind at the end of it. So for instance, if it's using, well, there's a reason that we're using quality essential oils in aromatherapy blends is because we believe it will be good for your skin. Or there's a reason we're using these butters, these oils, and these combinations because it will be good for the sort of the hair type you've got, or it will be good for the skin type you've got, or it will be good for whatever it is that you need. And therefore, over time, we've kind of accumulated, if you like, all of these great stories from customers and from through word of mouth. Not something that we've kind of deliberately done. in that sense. But people have written us letters. They come through on social media channels in more modern time. Before that, we had kind of online forums and things like that where we had a lot of feedback and people very, very positive about products and negative. So you get to see both sides of that coin, and you get, but in doing that, it becomes very impassioned, and people believe in you, and they want you to do better, and then therefore you go back into the labs or you go back to your job and you think, no, I really want to make this work. So in terms of the whole, I think that makes, you know, connecting to customers is key, and it's something that we're actively doing all the time, and something that we've become renowned for, but equally you can always be doing better. So really good. I think the term is short feedback loop. You know, we get plenty of that.
Let me take one of these ideas you had and see if I can just get you to take it a little further. So when you're talking about the skin, for example, or the hair, and you're creating product for a particular customer user type of some way, you might say, what are you asking or what do you understand mm-hmm. about how that could make their life better? So here's a person who has challenging skin or a particular kind of skin that could be. What is it that you're seeking to make possible in their life that if they don't have your products, they wouldn't have necessarily?
Well, I think you can be quite sort of benign in terms of just giving shine to somebody's hair. Or for me, as a perfumer, you know, like that's quite an, I think you were using the word adornment, you know, that's quite an adorning feature. But in actual fact, there's plenty of things that, you know, they can start at that level to, there are sort of testimonials. And we don't advertise our products with any kind of obvious physiological benefit, because that requires animal testing, a whole nother area. But people have used it on psoriasis or on eczema or on conditions that were really quite, I wouldn't go so far as to say debilitating, but it could well be for people. And that has had a sort of direct benefit. And there's people who will say that has changed their life. I think that's the sort of, you're talking about the sort of physical kind of presence. And then there's the people who really just love Lush and everything that we're trying to express and the fun that we're having, or it may be the campaigns and the ethics that we hold. So if you are vegan or vegetarian and you really struggle to find ethically sourced products that you believe in and actually do the things that you would like them to do, we're hoping that we're an avenue for that. You know, so there's almost, you know, and that's a little bit more intangible, but it again contributes to that thing.
Now, that's a very important one, because I do believe that people are seeking increasingly to live with their values, and it is hard to do that. And by the way, the word adorning doesn't just mean dressing or appearance. It literally means, what tribe do I belong to? It literally, how do I find my community, which is what you just described, right? Yeah. That's why we adorn, because we choose things that give us a community, a tribe we belong to. Let's give me one story about what you're doing back upstream, about the effects that you're able to have. And I know I've heard some of those stories from your folks, Vancouver, and from Gregory. But I would love for you to share some of the amazing things that you're doing with working with suppliers to try to change things in a very deep way.
Yeah, I think, I mean, naturally, because of our ethics, we've evolved into, you know, looking at our supply chains as most businesses would, and then questioning a lot of things around that. And I think if you want specific examples of what we've been up to, well, we established the Slush Fund, the Sustainable Lush Fund, about 5 years ago, which is basically a very big experiment in agroecology, permaculture, these different methods of growing and caring for planet, community, and sharing fairly the profits from that. But that's something that's always sort of been in our, I don't know, using the word DNA, but you know, it's been in the ethos of the business from the beginning to look after one another and stuff. Some specific examples. Well, one thing that excites me at the moment is we've been buying fairly traded shea butter from the south, from the north of Ghana, sorry, in Africa. And there we have, that was a community project of, say, well, when we first started trading with them, I think maybe 40 to 50 women. And then over 10 years of business that we've built with them in a kind of symbiotic way, they have something like nearly 500 women as part of that group, which is just purely, you know, and that if we're looking at regeneration, it's been really lovely because it's kind of a social regeneration thing. A lot of these women were widows. They'd lost their husbands. They were ostracized from their communities. They weren't a part of anything. And the community center and the good work of the Ajoba Collective there really helped to bring people together. But we're then looking at a kind of, okay, that was a social regeneration, but now there are ecological impacts now from climate change, from man-made issues like overgrazing or charcoal clearance of the forest for charcoal making, and including of the actual trees themselves that providing this, you know, the shea trees are being cut for charcoal. And so now we're at a stage where we're looking at the farmers there and the women being able to find regenerative ways of growing shea trees with mixed systems that could provide charcoal burning wood some other way, or and that's an example of a kind of ongoing continuing relationship with real benefit to us because we have a wonderful quality shea butter that we use in all of our products, and also for the community, you hope they're having benefit then as well, and you can visit and talk to them and see if they agree.
Right, lovely stories. The second principle that we work with that we believe indicates when you're working regenerative is you're working with potential rather than working with standardized ideals which you impose on everyone. And what that means is you go look at a specific community, a specific place, a specific even supplier in your supply system, and you work with what they need uniquely. I could hear you just describing that in the North Ghana stories, where instead of having, you don't have a set of things, you say, we do this in every community, and if they're not meeting it, we don't work with them. You're very specific and connected to the local community. Could you say more about why you do that and any other story you have about paying attention to each distinctive community and its potential rather than standards and ideals you impose?
I think it comes from that sort of entrepreneurial kind of spirit where you're looking for opportunities. You know, I've watched my parents build several businesses over the years, and they were part of the founding team for Lush. And I think, you know, that I appreciate that. Looking for the opportunity, looking for that potential, believing in it and seeing that through is probably something that I've learned from a very young age personally. I think is maybe fitting with what you're describing, because in each area, you know, you soon realize that everybody's different. We know it, but everybody's different. Every ecological system is different. It's constantly changing. So you really need to have something that fits and it's going to work. And you need to weave together cultural differences, social differences, climatic, the soil, the you know, you need to be open to weaving those things together and finding a suitable and practical solution. So really driving towards something that, you know, benefits everybody. And it can be anything. You know, in Kenya, we were working with the Maasai as part of the Slush Fund, and they're supplying us with a local aloe, a very similar to aloe vera called secundiflora. In their region, they have an invasive species, which is the prickly pear. And when we were there, we were discussing with them from a cosmetics point of view, the prickly pear is actually a really valuable material. The pressed oil from that is one of the highest value oils on the market, you know, as a kind of vegetable oil. So now they're looking at this prickly pear, which was a real, I mean, literally, it was a pain for them. You know, it's prickly pear. They've got goats and different livestock who are grazing that don't get on with prickly pear. The thorns get stuck in them, either in their lips or elsewhere. And it was growing everywhere to now that being a resource. And that could potentially be a kind of enterprise, not actually for us in that instance, I think, just in terms of generating local wealth. So again, that's very specific to that region. And one of the things that we've always done as a company and as a team in buying is to go and visit ourselves there, see people, talk to them, understand what the bigger picture is, because you could send them an audit form with, like you say, all these pre-drawn out ideals and ideas that you want to happen. But that isn't the reality of that situation. You know, it may be the people you're sending it to can't read and write for a start, and that happens quite often, or the language doesn't work, or, you know, there's so many nuances that you can't do it without putting yourself there and then reacting accordingly. And again, it's the whole. You take in the whole, and then you can work on a creative solution, I suppose.
The third principle has to do with, again, I can hear it in some of the things you're already saying, but I'm going to ask you about a specific story to tell it. The third one is about how reciprocity is not transactional. It's not you do something for somebody or even one plant. It's a very systemic process. And you know that when you're working to get something to be exactly the right ingredient for your products you're making, it's also affecting their economy. It's affecting the ecology. And so you can see all of that. I know that you've been doing quite a bit of work as a company with the nut, almond, et cetera, industry. And that it is beginning to be noticed. Those stories are beginning to be told a bit about the work where you're doing. But I wonder if you'd tell our listeners a bit about how Lush went about that and what the sort of systemic effect is that you're hoping for and you're starting to already see.
In what, sorry, almond?
Yeah, the almond, I mean, I know I've heard a bit about the work with almond oil because that's, and of course, right. Almonds are a very big consumer of a variety of natural resources. Could you tell us a bit about what Lush is doing in that arena?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, I think I'm not so up to speed with the North American side of it because they've been spearheading that and doing a great job, which we 100% trusted in. With almond, I know that Gregory and the guys at TGI and then in North America, they really worked hard on that and they know all the kind of nuts and bolts and the ups and downs of it, whereas we just got the good news stories back here. So I feel a bit, you know. But what was the question again?
Is how you think about things systemically. You can't just think about getting an ingredient that is fair trade or ecological. You have to think about the whole system.
Yeah, and then there's, you said about reciprocity in that as well. Yeah, you want to talk about, especially from a supply chain point of view, it's very difficult to think about it individually because quite quickly things are linked to other things, you know, and especially because right now we're seeing a lot more climatic impact on raw materials being grown. And then you realize that the systems thinking is the only real way of dealing with any of that because so many things are attached to other things. But in terms of a supply chain, if we call it that, we also kind of look at it as a sort of web. There is a lot of reciprocity. There is a lot of things coming back to you that aren't necessarily the financial or the material rewards. Something that I've been been trying to describe to people, and actually the best way of describing that is the eight forms of capital in the Regenerative Enterprise book, because that really does help people realize that maybe you're doing something and it won't be for purely financial gain, but there may be something that you gain either through knowledge, you know, through experience, through cultural gain, or it can be really anything. And so I think that that for me is really where business becomes quite interesting because you do have this two-way street. It no longer becomes that sort of supply chain. It does become a link, you know, and you realize how connected things are. And that makes it, you know, it makes it more complicated, but it makes it more exciting to my mind.
I agree. There are so many things I could ask you, but I'm going to do one more question because we're going to have a short podcast when we do it. Developmental is the seventh principle, which means that we really work with even the human beings we're working with. We leave behind capability rather than doing just things for them. And inside your own business, you're working on developing people, growing their state of being, growing their personal mastery over their own capacity. And I'm wondering how Lush works about developing people when it's in each of its locations or back inside of its company. You seem pretty smart, like you're really connected, and I know from a few other stories. So there's something you're doing about the way you work with people that grows them as human beings and develops them. Can you speak to that a bit?
Yeah, I think that I wouldn't say we pride ourselves because there's always more you can do, but we certainly do believe in people and empowerment. And I think right from the beginning of Lush, in actual fact, it's one of the main drivers of success because we did empower and we still do all our shop managers and everybody we work with because we expected a sort of very fast rate of growth. Not because that's what we wanted, but it actually started to kind of transpire that way. And to keep up with it, you really got to trust the people that you're with, that you're working with. And through that, you have to sort of develop one another's abilities. You have to look at yourself and think, okay, I'm lacking in this area, or things have moved on and I need to find a way of kind of keeping up. And we do our best to put in those sort of structures and support networks that help empower people and to get the best out of people, I suppose. We also aren't particularly, we're not stringent about how people look. We're not stringent about religion or race or any of those sort of things. And consequently, I think we attract people that are looking for a diverse working environment, which again, you get a kind of natural development when that happens, because you have people from different cultures or different perspectives who are in your workplace that challenge some of your preconceived beliefs, for instance, or challenge your thoughts on things, and that really helps move you on. So you don't get to sit in a little box feeling good about everything you're doing and not ever questioning anything. You do get a lot of jostle and a lot of the word is dynamics, you know, and that can be, that's usually it's positive, sometimes it's a bit negative, and we try and weed that stuff out if it hurts people. But you know, I think that overall development is really key to anything. And one of the sort of in-house sayings, if you like, is it's not finished. In terms of the business is never finished. You can't just say, okay, we've bought all the ingredients, we've made all the product, we sold everything, well done us, we can all go home. There's always a little something that's coming up. There's always something that, you know, that's moved on. There's something that we thought was good, now it's no, maybe not so good, or, you know, and that continuation is key. And it's good for people to know that, I think, inside the company and outside, because, it is difficult to turn it off. You know, it's constantly evolving.
How about with your communities you work in, like Ghana? Do you feel like you leave capability behind? And how do you make sure or encourage that to happen?
That's certainly something that we strive for. We really look for, it's something we termed as financial succession. You know, the lot, if it's appropriate, it's not always appropriate depending on the political situation or the capabilities of the groups we're working with. But if possible, we would fund groups with the intention that either they would become their own self-sustaining businesses, or they would have the capabilities of looking after themselves within, say, 4 or 5 years. And that's where the ingredients came from, because we tried to identify ingredients that they could maybe grow, that could be exported where appropriate, and that would generate income. And so that naturally led for, and this is where it's kind of the reciprocal nature of it, we then had to learn a lot. We had to learn how we could best support that approach, what was appropriate culturally. And then the people we worked with had also to learn, okay, now I need financial skills then. I need to be able to put a profit and loss sheet together. I need to be able to file accounts every month if that's what I'm doing. And we've tried, and it's by no means perfect, but we've tried to instill kind of skills that we believed in, going back to the entrepreneurial spirit and kind of that, you know, making the most of that potential that's there, to leave behind something that can stand on its own 2 feet. And the people that we've been working with, we're quite lucky in that they are very keen on similar. You know, they've been in charity aid and development for a long time, and are a little bit bored of having to go cap in hand to everybody asking for money, and they would like the opportunity to be able to sustain themselves and really see through their vision. So we try and work with them in that way as best we can. I'm making it sound like that's a nice, clean, easy path. It's not. It is something that we've all struggled with, worked hard on, and they're continuing to.
Thank you so much for joining us today and listening to another great story of a small business which is in pursuit of the regenerative business paradigm. Most of the people that you hear here were a part of the Regenerative Business Prize that was sponsored by the Regenerative Business Summit, and they were an honoree in one of 6 business streams. This is a production of Carol Sanford Institute. If you would like to know more about the regenerative business paradigm and read materials which could explain the 7 first principles, you can go to our website at carolsanfordinstitute.com. You can find papers and blogs, and you can also go to the Regenerative Business Summit website, where you can learn more about getting an invitation to join us in an active conversation. Thank you very much, and see you next time.